waiting, waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to Revue.
It will be soon, but not tonight.
I'm not quite ready.
Though my nights are sleepless, I still dream. I've won and lost many things in my career.
Blood.
But I've never main evented at WrestleMania. This is my chance.
My last chance.
In my way, there is a man, and that man has my gold.
My ticket.
He may be the game, he may be the champion, he may be the best in the industry today,
I should know.
But he is no Cactus Jack.
And he never will be.
15 years I've been chasing this dream. Dozens of fractures, hundreds of stitches, countless nights I've fled. You may say this is no dream, this is a nightmare. Maybe, but it's my nightmare. I wake up.
Snow can wait, I forgot my mittens. Wipe my nose, get my new boots on. I get a little warm in my heart when I think of winter. I put my hand in my father's glove.
Welcome, everybody, to Revue Away. It's John Pollock, joined by Wei Ting, and tonight, a pay-per-view in his namesake, No Way Out.
Oh, God. I thought we'd... Stop it, please.
Okay.
Don't do that.
We'll keep it down. So, Wei, how was your week?
Oh, my week was great. Well, let's not talk about the week. Let's talk about the Royal Rumble. What did you think?
The 40-man concept, I was a little... I didn't know what to expect going into it tonight, but then when they decided on some of the entrants the way they did, I mean, that was, I guess, clever.
I would say that exact same word. That's what comes to mind, is clever.
And as much as people are going to complain about it, it made sense who went over.
Well, it could have been better, you know.
Well,
definitely.
I want to see what happens on Raw, because if they take him and really put the right focus behind him, I think this will be a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought the outcome was slightly surprising. I think they could have gone in a number of directions, but the fact that they went where they did...
I'm happy with it.
I am too.
I just hope that they have this angle mapped out towards WrestleMania, and they're not just going week to week.
Please, come on. You know that they're just going to change it all tomorrow.
Well, let's have some faith. I hope he starts off Raw and cuts the promo that's going to kind of... Okay, this is the road to WrestleMania now.
Yeah, well... We can hope for that.
But right now, Wei, we're taking a detour from the road to WrestleMania because we are going on the backwards path to No Way Out 2000 from February the 27th of 2000, Hartford, Connecticut at the Civic Center.
Yeah.
I was in grade 10 at the time.
Mm-hmm. And?
That's it.
February of 2000.
That's so long ago.
Yeah, it's 10 years ago.
11 years
ago.
Oh,
yeah, you're right, 11. Jesus.
Wow.
I was 15.
Yeah. Man, it's like I've really started to feel old when I look back at some of these. And it's like I remember watching these events. And it doesn't feel like it's 11 years ago.
We've talked about this before, how the past 10 years have really not seemed like 10 years.
Especially when you look at a lot of the guys on this card who are like still, you know, players in the industry. Like you look at Hunter to a degree. I mean, Jericho, Angle...
All
the Dudleys.
Guys. Everybody.
Edge, Christian. I mean, Kane, Xbox. I mean, it's just... It's
Billy
really
gone.
It's, well, especially if you were to look at 2000 and look at a roster from 1990 on a WWF pay-per-view.
Mm.
And it's like, it's completely different. I was thinking about this the other day because...
Really?
I was thinking about this when it came to TNA Creative because Vince Russo... You can state the last year he saw success, like tangible business success, was in 1999, 12 years ago. 12 years ago. So can you imagine in the Attitude Era, if they had been – they hired a guy in creative who his last successful year was in 1987.
They – okay, not in that example, but WCW was hiring a bunch of WWF superstars from the 80s.
Well, I was just looking in terms of creative. I think 11 years of failure in creative.
Okay.
It's very different than comparing talent.
He, 11 years of failure, but he had some successes.
Where? In those 11 years?
In the, like 98.
I'm saying since then. I'm saying since 99. Since he left the WWF, he went to WCW from 99 till the end of 2000. That was... failure is an understatement. He then went to TNA in 2003.
Yeah.
Where he lasted for about a year or so. Left.
He must be doing something right if he's managed to keep a job for this long.
He's doing something right. Yeah. Because he's been there since September of 06 in TNA.
We give him, I mean, okay, we're always quick to blame TNA's troubles on Vince Russo, but I'm sure he does a lot of positive things within the company that we never hear about.
I'm not doubting that. I think Russo at times, he'll absolutely take a lot and not be, I think some of his promos are well written at times. But I think overall, if you're assessing this guy, it's a failure. Characters are not over. Numbers have remained the same. Pay-per-view has plummeted from when they didn't have TV before he was there. I mean, there's no direction you can look at and say, this guy is worth the problems because he brings us X.
Yeah, well, I don't know within TNA what the thinking is. But for some reason, this guy has managed to be employed.
I'll tell you what's wrong. Remember when Hogan and Bischoff first came in, and they wanted to get rid of, they wanted certain talent gone. And one of the big things was Dixie saying, I am not going to fire anybody. She's like fostered this little family where no one gets fired. And the result is that it breeds complacency. People know their jobs are safe. They're not under the gun. And they feel they have a job for life there.
We can speculate. We can say maybe that's the reason.
I'm just saying, when you're in a job...
You're saying Dixie is too nice. She's too nice.
Yes. I'm sure she's a lovely woman. I've only talked to her once or twice.
You have?
Yes. I interviewed her once.
Oh.
And I think she wished me a happy birthday one year.
Oh, wow.
Very nice woman. I'm sure she's pleasant to
chat
with.
That's right. Yeah, didn't she tweet you? A happy or something on your Facebook. She put.
Yeah, she might have been. Her assistant probably sent me a happy birthday. Very nice of her. Very nice woman. We'll never say that against him. But you know what?
Too nice.
We don't buy pay-per-views because the people writing it are nice people that we'd have dinner with.
Yeah.
No. Let's get into this pay-per-view, which people did legitimately buy. No Way Out Way. Brought to you by PhoneFree.com, which know it's an old pay-per-view when it's brought to you by. Long distance savings. People, I mean,
do people?
The technology has completely changed now. This is like Skype.
I don't think I've ever even made a collect call.
No, they had all those. I remember like 1010, 320, and all those numbers were free long distance for an hour.
Oh, is that the whole gimmick?
You would dial. It would just be a discount on long distance calls, I believe. This one is pretty deceiving. It's phonefree.com, so I assume it's all free.
What we do in the Chinese community, we have these prepaid long-distance cards that you can always get at, like, Chinese supermarket, or maybe a drugstore. And you just dial a phone number and then a code in the back, and the rates are ridiculously cheap.
Well, that's a similar concept here, I think.
Okay.
Never used it myself, but... they felt wrestling fans like to call long distance on
I'd never
discount.
Understood that either. Every collecting collect what do you call this?
Collect
call company would advertise on wrestling.
It would be great to one day have on some just advertising executive who would explain to us what they see in the wrestling product, because we always hear like the fact that wrestling can do numbers, but it's
demographics. They're,
yeah, they just advertisers don't look at it as anything significant. Like a 3-5 in wrestling they would much rather advertise on the U.S. Open that does half the audience.
Doesn't that have to do with the perceived spending power of the?
Well, it's not perceived. It's been charted out the fact that wrestling has some of the lowest income households are watching pro wrestling. I mean, it's not just a stigma. It is
okay.
Bear in mind, you don't see car companies.
And thus the collect calls.
Poor they'll people. Do stuff for free. Poor Maybe people. If this won't cost them anything, we'll grab them.
Oh, man.
Oh, well.
We figured it out.
Yep. This much analysis on the friggin' sponsor board.
It's fascinating. I mean, what else? Skittles.
Pimple Cream. They had Stridex, remember, on a bunch.
Okay. Western Union.
PlayStation.
Because poor people can afford video games.
That's a bit of a jump. PlayStation wasn't cheap back in the day. You're right. M&Ms were big. That's a simple $2.
Yeah, what else? Snickers. You can always afford.
They love candy. Candy and video games.
So poor people.
I've never seen condoms advertised on a wrestling show.
No. Yeah, that's
because they want them to breed more. If they have unsafe sex, then it's new customers.
No, because I think...
For Skittles.
I think the advertisers think of pro wrestling fans as either poor people or just virgins. And I think...
Do you remember... Do you remember when the oversight committee was interviewing all the people back after the Benoit deal and they were looking at reforming the industry and Dixie Carter was one of the people, because they had to post all these transcripts online of the McMahons testifying and Dixie, and they asked Dixie to talk about the wrestling fan base, and Dixie's response was, have you ever seen the 40-year-old virgin? Those are our fans. Those are her direct words. And the transcript, I'm sure, is still online if you want to check that out. It's like, that's what she thought of the fans.
No,
these 40-year-old virgins.
No, she meant the audience for the movie.
No, she meant the. She said, "Have you seen the character?" I'm gonna find this transcript, everybody. Come or you on. Know what? Ahmad Butt, go find us the transcript. That guy's great. Or Jay Hunter.
You're right about the whole vegan thing, but come on, there's no way she meant that. She would not directly insult her fans.
Someone find the transcript. I want the exact quote. I'm not gonna say anything.
Of course, when you read it out of context, just in a transcript, you would take that.
Well, we'll get Henry Waxman on the show, and he can explain the context.
Who's Henry Waxman?
He was the head of the oversight committee at the time before he moved on.
Why don't we get Dixie? You're Facebook buddies with her.
Yeah, I'll say. Well, I once emailed her, and I got a scolding from TNA management.
You did not
directly email the head of this company. It's like, really?
Okay. No Way Out.
No Way Out 2000, folks. We start off with a video package on Mick Foley stating that retirement is soon, but it's not tonight. And that Triple H stands in his way of headlining WrestleMania. And Hunter may be the best in the industry, but he isn't Cactus Jack. And this was all a voiceover from Mick Foley. And
I thought I really liked it.
It was good. Mm-hmm. He ended it with, some may call his career a nightmare, but it's his nightmare. And he gets to decide when he wakes up.
Ooh.
Ominous.
Yeah, very nice, dramatic intro video and Foley's motivations and what's at stake here, a main event slot at WrestleMania.
It is.
And made perfectly clear.
And for those just maybe not recalling, this is coming a month after the Rumble with these two having that big street fight that we reviewed a couple of weeks back.
Yes, billed as Mick Foley's
potential retirement match.
That's right.
Title versus career.
You know, like we always, every week we watch these old shows and it's always a challenge having to think back to what the actual storylines were and what the build was, but when the concept is as simple and pure as a title versus a retirement, it's always easy to really get into.
That being said, I remember leading up to this match. First of all, this was Mick Foley's first Hell in a Cell match since the Hell in a Cell match he had with Taker.
He had one with Kane. With Kane that nobody remembers. I think that was on Raw. Yeah.
You might have been right. Yeah, exactly. No one remembers that.
Yeah.
I don't. So anyway, I thought of that, and I did not at all believe Mick Foley was going to retire.
Yeah. Well, look at even 10 years ago, nobody believed that stipulation.
All right. So we have Jim Ross.
He didn't retire.
No. Well, he took 4 weeks off. Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler are our commentary team. Ross says that tonight will be the most emotionally charged event in WWF history. It's a big statement to make. And Lawler's playing heel, that Foley is going to retire tonight. Then Kurt Angle comes out and cuts a promo and states that tonight he will become the Eurocontinental Champion. He's already got the European title and Jericho is the IC Champion. He then rags on the Hartford Whalers, who had since left to become the Carolina Hurricanes. And then China's music plays, and I was a little confused here. China came out by herself with a bazooka that she used to shoot into the crowd.
She had the bazooka?
Yeah.
Cool. Nice.
What?
No, I just didn't notice the bazooka.
Didn't you see the thing she brought out, this giant thing, and then she shot it into the crowd?
I guess I wasn't paying attention. You know what? X-Pac had a bazooka, too. I don't know if you knew, but in the build for his match with Kane, he shot a bazooka.
We'll get into that.
So they must have just had this bazooka in the back.
They had to get their use out of it, right? Shooting pyro in people's faces. So she comes out. She's the manager of Chris Jericho at this point, and she gets her own entrance.
Yeah. Not only that, the bell rings as she's walking out. Like, the official match officially starts.
It's a good thing that this was not an amateur contest in Ontario because... Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, first of all, let's take a quick break. This past week, me and Wei got to work at this boxing event called Agency Wars 2.
Okay.
Well, I just want to explain this story really quickly. I think some people might get a kick out of this. And if anyone at our company gets upset for me talking about this, this is John Pollock stating the story and not Wei Ting. But we get there. And, of course, this is a commissioned event by the province of Ontario. And they...
This is amateur boxing.
Amateur boxing. So we're in the room for all the weigh-ins, and the fighters are all getting a speech by the head producer. And then the head of the boxing commission, not Ken Hayashi, this was another woman who was assigned to this event, she was overseeing and informed us, no cameras are allowed in the ring when the decision is rendered at the end of the event, at the end of the fight.
They said no cameras are allowed during the fight itself.
Yes. So,
not in between.
In between rounds, yeah. You couldn't get into the ring to shoot them in their corner. You had to basically get on the edge of the apron outside.
Yeah,
this is very uncharacteristic of any boxing event you've seen on HBO or Showtime or TSN, anywhere. Little odd. And then included, yes, you cannot get into the ring with a camera till after the decision has been read. So,
is that exactly what they said? Because I wasn't actually in there.
Oh, you weren't?
No.
Yeah, that's what she said.
But she said not okay during. Okay,
then during the event, we're waiting for at the end of the fight. Typically, the bell will ring to signify the decision is about to be read.
Yeah.
And the first fight, the bell doesn't ring, and the producer's going, "Well, have them ring the bell, ring the bell." And then the voiceover comes in. The commission will not ring the bell to signify a decision. They are not allowed to.
What?
That's what I thought. Pretty weird rules. Yeah. So when the fight ended, typically everyone's kind of all buzzing about the fight, and then you'll ring the bell, and that signifies, okay, the decision's about to be read by the announcer. And so the commission would not ring the bell for that.
They're not allowed to ring a bell? What is the bell supposed to signify?
Why, I don't know. I don't know why you can't get in the ring between rounds and shoot them in their corners either.
Okay.
Anyway.
So what did they ring the bell when time ran out?
At the end of the round, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was the only time a bell has a specific use.
Why do you need to ring the bell? Oh, okay. I thought the bell was just to get everybody's attention. I didn't think there was any type of formal purpose for it.
I don't think there is, Wei.
Anyway.
Maybe they it was union and they only had a quota of how many times they could ring the bell.
Yeah.
For fear of wrist damage.
It was really weird. I was one of the cameramen on the apron, of course.
I don't envy any promoter that runs events in the province of Ontario. I could not deal with those last-minute headaches. It's not like this was brought to everyone's attention a week before. It was like an hour and a half before the event, and they had to scramble.
Yeah, there was a little bit of trouble just with the producers and ourselves. But it actually made my job easier because I didn't have to go in and out of the ropes.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah.
So, I'm looking forward to when UFC comes here. I know there's going to be problems. If not for UFC, for these smaller shows.
Yeah, I could see that. But the UFC just has so much money. I feel like...
they're going to create less headaches for them?
Yeah, I feel like the UFC is very much in bed with the government for a lot of this stuff. And I don't think it'll be too much problem.
So that was our second tangent, everybody.
Oh, boy.
China came down in the bell rung. Then Chris Jericho comes out, calls Angle... Gives him a new three eyes, an idiot, an imbecile, and an ignoramus, and then refers to him as Kirk Angel, and then he refers to himself as a bad mamma jamma.
I was not a fan of this Jericho babyface promo.
No.
He doesn't make eye contact with the audience. A lot of these promos he doesn't really...
That was
he always looks down.
I don't know if that was instituted at that point, but... That was one of the weird WWF things.
He's not allowed to look at the audience?
When a babyface comes down the aisle, they don't slap hands and you're not to look at the crowd. You're to look straight ahead.
I meant when he was actually talking. When people cut promos, they're typically at least looking at the camera. Like Jericho doesn't – he just kind of – it's like he's doing a voiceover or something. And I just found his lines to be so stupid. like almost like Cena, John Cena level type of comedy here. Your experience, your viewing experience must be quite different now watching Jericho at this time, having read his book and knowing what he was going through, huh?
Yeah. He hated this time, and he hated working with China, so it was great to read. I finished that book in 2 days.
Yeah.
So we'll be chatting about it more in the weeks coming up. But yeah, suffice it to say, Jericho was not at a happy point in his career during this time. It was like the first 9 months in the WWF were not great for him. I think the first positive moment for him was like in April when they did the fake title switch where he beat Hunter on Raw, mm-hmm. and then they immediately flipped it back. Mm-hmm. I think that was his first positive moment, but he just...
hated this time.
It was just, yeah, he was basically told he was shit. Literally told mm-hmm. that by Vince from that quote we read the other day. We get huge chance of Y2J to start the match. Angle gets the advantage on the floor, throws Jericho into the steps. Then they counter. Jericho comes off the steps with a very awkward moonsault where it looks like he caught Angle with a knee in the head. Mm-hmm. It looked very sloppy.
It just looked like maybe it was a shorter distance than he and Angle had hoped.
Then we see a suplex by Angle to Jericho off the second ropes, and then a German suplex. Jericho continues selling at this point, made a comeback with a spinning heel kick and then a face plant, along with a running forearm to the face of Angle for a two count. Crowd was into that near fall. Then Jericho counters a Hurricane Rana attempt by Angle with a powerbomb. Angle grabs the arms of Jericho and transitions into an armbar, but Jericho reaches the ropes. It's just interesting to see an armbar technique here.
That's right.
Released by Angle here.
In the year 2000.
2000. Jericho then runs into the turnbuckle. Angle gets out of the way and hits the Angle Slam for a two count. Then Angle grabs the Intercontinental title to hit Jericho. He's stopped by Tim White. And then Jericho applies the salad shooter, but Angle gets to the ropes. And then on the floor, Angle tries to hit China with the title. He swings and misses. Jericho knocks Angle into China, and then China goes into the steps. And then back in the ring, Jericho goes for the Asahi moonsault. But as he lands, Angle is holding onto the title and corks Jericho. The ref is tending to China, doesn't see the title being hit, counts the three, and Kurt Angle is the Eurocontinental champion, as Tim White and Earl Hebner argue after the match, which would culminate later in the show.
Yeah, they were arguing about the finish of this match. Mm-hmm. When have they ever done that?
Arguing over a match?
Well, why would Earl Hebner suddenly run out to this match and dispute a decision?
He was just so outraged at Tim White screwing Chris Jericho. It's like, I'm the only guy who screws Canadians.
Okay. There were a lot of instances, especially on this show, of just guys... not caring about the referee, seeing them use weapons. Like, just blatantly grabbing a weapon and bringing it into the ring to use it, despite being in full view of the referee.
We then go backstage, and Michael Cole is with the Dudley Boys. Michael Cole, at this point, he, like, had the frosted tips.
Yeah.
Looked like a huge horrible. Man. Just looked horrible.
You know what? I'm sure he was really picked on often here. And then... Now, I'm sure that's definitely played a part in how how he is today. You know, like now nobody really picks on the guy because he's sort of a bully now, especially on commentary. Mm-hmm. But I think maybe that's because he was bullied so much himself.
Now he's fighting back. The Dudleys state that the people should be ready to see another title change, and they have two words for the New Age Outlaws, 3D. Is that more a number and a letter?
Yeah, neither of those were words.
No. Well, they're dumb, right? That was Bubba's gimmick.
And Bubba was talking with a southern accent here.
Well, this was when he did his stuttering gimmick.
Yeah, but did he always have a southern accent?
I think. To a degree.
He didn't even stutter here. It was just the
I think they gave him more of an accent and less of the stutter, and then like a month later it was all gone.
Yeah.
They just slowly morphed out of it and got rid of the tie-dye.
So they were like, okay, we don't like the stuttering, but you need some type of speech impediment.
Southerners. That's considered a speech impediment if you have a southern accent. It's great. Up next, the New Age Outlaws against the Dudley Boys for the tag titles. Now, when we watched the Royal Rumble way, the New Age Outlaws, I thought were baby faces. Maybe they weren't. I don't know. But they were baby faces at this point. So at some point, they flipped. Because I thought they were heels at the
Hold
Rumble.
On, weren't they baby faces in this match?
Yes, they were. Yeah, sorry, they were. I had it mixed up. I thought they were heels.
You know what? They are heels. They are heels because they're aligned with Triple H.
But in this match, they're baby faces against the Dudleys.
Oh, yeah.
Confusing.
Because
you're right. They were aligned with Hunter at this point.
I don't know.
Anyway. Road Dogg comes in and says, "Welcome to the doghouse." And this elicits a bark out of Jerry Lawler. Like he's barking at the moon or something.
It's a doghouse.
It's the doghouse, which is, yeah. They show a clip of Billy Gunn.
You know, like, okay, just I think it's often that this Road Dogg character appears on this program, this podcast, and every time he comes out and does this whole spiel, I mean, I was a part of it at that time, too. I think I loved it at the time as well. But just watching this 10 years later...
It's so lame.
It's so lame. It's especially lame when you just really think about what this is. And what this is it's... This dude from, where is he from? Alabama? Where is he actually from?
Georgia.
Georgia?
Southern.
This guy from Georgia recycling the most cliched rap catchphrases, not only saying them out loud, but getting an entire audience of predominantly white people who probably are maybe never listened to a rap song to say these same things. Welcome to the doghouse.
Come on.
With two G's.
With two G's. Subtle. They show a clip of Billy Gunn hitting the Famouser on Bubba Ray from SmackDown through a table. The match starts and we get a huge chant of ECW to start. Then they hit the was up spot on Road Dogg. The Dudleys work over Road Dogg in their corner. Then Road Dogg finally makes the hot tag to Billy Gunn, who hits the Famouser on Devon, but Bubba makes the save. Bubba then pulls Billy Gunn to the floor, and Gunn shields his face with his hands as Bubba hits him in the arm with a pipe. Then we see a 3D in the ring on Road Dogg, and just like that, the Dudleys are the new champs, and they did an injury angle to Billy Gunn because he would end up missing like 6 to 8 months with a torn rotator cuff.
So this was the angle?
This was the angle.
Just pull out a lead pipe in the middle of the match and hit the guy.
And they never did a feud when they came back. And they teased the breakup of DX at the end with Road Dogg and Billy Gunn arguing with one another. So Dudleys are your new champs.
Yes, and this would, of course, be the Outlaws' final reign as tag team champions.
Oh, really?
Yes. And this really was... Perhaps the shift in the tag team title picture with the belts now being exchanged between the Dudleys and, of course, Edge and Christian.
And the Hardys. Yep. Yeah. They show Angle celebrating in the concession stands with his titles. Then we get a recap of an angle of Viscera splashing a pregnant Mae Young on Raw. And then they replay Sunday Night Heat, where Mark Henry attacks Viscera. And this match was made at the last second to, I don't know, add what to this pay-per-view. And they state that Mae Young's baby is hanging on after the splash from Viscera. Which, wouldn't that be like attempted murder?
Yeah.
To
I don't know.
Attack a pregnant woman and splash her?
Yeah, but is that actually murder? Can you murder a fetus?
I think, yeah, you can be charged.
You could be charged, yeah. But he didn't know that he was.
Everyone knew Mae Young was pregnant. That was the angle. That's why she was so, did it.
Maybe he was so. Maybe he was so stupid. I don't know. Can you be convicted of murder for hurting a fetus inside a woman?
Of course,
you can. Okay, I don't know what the laws are.
Well, I guess it depends. I guess it would be in. If it was in Texas, he'd be executed.
Yeah.
So that leads to Mark Henry versus Viscera. Mark Henry versus Viscera.
Yeah. Why? I noticed.
This looks like shit. This looks horrible.
Okay.
Mark Henry wrestles in a large coat. Jim Ross, before they even
Viscera,
lock up.
You mean Viscera wrestles in a large coat?
Yes. Jim Ross states before they even touch that this is not going to be a pretty match if you're grading on a star system.
No, it's not.
So, that was Jim Ross giving a wink to Dave Meltzer that we apologize for this. Just give us 5 minutes and it'll be over with. Ross cites that Henry also has the world's strongest sperm. And we are reviewing this.
Did he say that?
Yes, he said this.
Jim Ross said that?
The world's strongest sperm. Mark Henry goes to the floor and Viscera throws him into the steps. How many steel step shots did we see on this pay-per-view?
There were
200.
Yeah.
Then he vertically set the steps up and hit him again. We get chance of boring 3 minutes into the match. Then a Samoan drop by Viscera. And then Mae Young ran out as Viscera delivers a belly-to-belly suplex. And the cameras go black. Mm-hmm. Did you have this problem?
Yeah, they even acknowledged it. I'm sure this was live.
Yeah, it was live. It was almost as if the gods knew that this was going to be so horrible. Let's just relieve these people of this problem.
You know, I began thinking that perhaps this could have been intentional because Mae Young ran out and they didn't want a reoccurrence of perhaps what happened at the Rumble. Maybe they're afraid Mae Young would just suddenly strip on TV.
Well, it wasn't a shoot at the Rumble. I mean, that was a planned spot. She wasn't going to do anything. Yeah. They didn't tell her to.
Yeah.
So Mae Young is out. They cite technical problems. And then apparently while the lights were out, Viscera attempted to splash Mae Young again. But he was stopped by Mark Henry, who hit a slam on Viscera, won the match. All this is blacked out until afterwards. And Lawler says it's appropriate we had to call that match like it was on the radio because that was the era Young is from. And I just thought this match should have been on Raw the next night and not on this pay-per-view. However, the next night on Raw, do you know what occurred?
The birth.
The birth of the Handway in Madison Square Garden, which was the same arena that that Rumble took place.
Hmm. Wait, they went back just a month after?
Yeah, they did.
Huh.
A month later with Raw and the Hand.
So all right.
They really cherished that New York crowd.
Yeah.
The best of Mae Young. Lillian Garcia is with Jericho. And her insightful question was, what happened out there? And if there's any friction between Jericho and China. And Jericho cuts a goofy promo on Angle celebrating and basically tells him, don't celebrate.
Mm-hmm. And then there's this awkward pause at the end with Jericho looking right into the camera. What it seemed like was, it just seemed like the director probably cut out of that segment late. And for a second, you could even see Jericho... his face just looked like he started to look away from the camera as if the tape had stopped rolling.
So then we go to Billy Gunn being seen by the trainers, and he can't move his arm. So that's it for Billy Gunn, Way. We're not going to see him for a while.
Yeah.
Next up, it's the Hardys against Edge and Christian in a number one contenders match. Terry is making her return after she was attacked by the Dudley boys. She should have taken Jeff Hardy's advice.
Which was...
No! It's too dangerous. But she got, I guess, powerbombed, but she was back here. And she's enlisted the protection of the APA tonight after her attack from the Dudleys. Jeff misses a corkscrew moonsault early on to Edge. I thought Jeff's speed just in this match was incredible at this point of his career. I mean, he moved just incredibly.
Mm-hmm.
The Hardys took off their shirts for the crowd. Very weird.
Yeah. Very cheap.
Did you catch Matt Hardy as he was beating on Christian and he yelled twice, come on, Christian, get up! And then he said it again. It was just so robotic, his delivery.
I find the taking the shirt off to be too much of a gimmick, especially when both guys do it. I feel, okay, it's okay maybe. Like, you know, like Mr. Perfect would always have his straps. That could be that type of move, okay? And that's what it should be. It should be like if Jeff Hardy lands a huge move.
Well, if your audience is 70% guys, what reaction are they expecting from guys?
Whoa. He's hot.
I know there are some guys who are just like, their reactions are just like Pavlovian, where it's just they would applaud anyway. Just like, well, everyone's cheering, so we will too. And the guys are.
He took his shirt off. Nice.
Yeah.
But it's especially awkward when Jeff does it and then Matt Hardy sees Jeff doing it, so he does it himself.
I'll one up and outstrip my brother. It's very weird. I guess they evened it out because then Lita would do it as well when she joined them.
That made it more acceptable, sure.
Hardy's double-team Christian, including the poetry in motion. We see a springboard by Jeff into a moonsault off the ropes where he landed on the knees of Christian. And did you kind of notice the Hardys acting like as subtle heels in this match? I found they worked as the heels.
No, not really.
Christian hits a crossbody off the ropes to the floor on Matt. Edge then hits a big pile driver to Jeff, but only gets a two count. Then Jeff delivers a Hurricane Rana to Edge and nearly lands right on his head in delivering it. Then we fast forward a bit. Hardy's hit a splat, their splash leg drop combination off the top rope to Christian, but Edge makes the save. Then Edge cuts off the poetry in motion to Jeff by spearing him in midair. And then Matt gets out of the way of another spear attempt and hits Edge with the twist of fate. And at this point, Jeff was going for the swanton as Terry gets up on the apron and started just making the Hardy like gun gestures. It looked so stupid and knocks Jeff to the floor. Jeff has to sell this from Terry, the 90-pound Terry. Matt then goes for the twist of fate. Christian shoves him into the ropes and Terry slaps him. And then Christian hits the reverse neck breaker, and Edge and Christian get the win, with ENC looking terribly confused at Terry, who has turned heel on the Hardys. And after the match, Matt grabs Terry by the hair, and APA beats up the Hardys because they had been hired for protection, and leaves them laying, and Ross ends the segment with Terry running off saying, "What a little bitch."
He is so funny.
I mean, this was clever that they had the APA there, and you also had Ross having to say that they don't condone men attacking women over acts of betrayal, as Matt just grabbed the hair of Terry. I don't know if that's the best message, but I don't know. This match was just kind of
decent.
Not at their top level.
Well, okay, what is their top level? Their top,
the ladder match.
Exactly. Yeah. This group of guys, this group of wrestlers are only known for their weapons matches.
I think they could still have had a better match even without the gimmick.
Yeah, maybe, but around this time, it was almost expected that if this was a pay-per-view and these guys were wrestling, you would always at least see a ladder or something.
Well, they were building that up till Mania.
I know, anyway, I know. So. Well, and that's the problem with having gimmick matches every pay-per-view.
Then we go to Michael Cole with Edge and Christian. Christian is very confused over what Terry did and said he didn't want to win like that. Edge doesn't care because they won the match. And this was actually the first time that they were discussing breaking these two up. That was the original plan. But then when they put the titles on them, then they turned heel and they worked so well together as the heel unit.
Wait, so this was actually to tease a breakup?
Yeah, they were originally going to break up after WrestleMania that year.
No, that's a little disappointing because I originally, without knowing that, I enjoyed this segment because it shows individuality between two members. You don't always, just because two people feel differently within the same team doesn't mean that they have to break up. Within a team itself, you should still have two individuals that can have opposing viewpoints. And I thought that's what they were actually doing here, but to know that they're actually teasing a breakup is a little disappointing.
Lillian Garcia is then with the Big Show, and Show says that tonight is about redemption, and he replays the Rumble finish twice to prove that he won the Rumble. And in both replays, we did not actually see the feet of Rock touching the ground because the camera cut off like at his calves. Did you notice that?
Are you sure? I'm pretty sure they played a good replay.
If you look at the replay, it's like you don't actually see his feet.
It was
a bad angle.
All right. I don't know about that. I think I clearly saw his feet land first and then he pulled them back up.
All right. We replay an angle from Sunday Night Heat where the Big Boss Man and Prince Albert assaulted Taz from behind in the locker room. So we've got another match added to the show. It's Big Boss Man and Taz with Prince Albert in his corner. We see a suplex by Taz in the ring. Then he applies the Taz mission on Boss Man, and right away Albert interferes for the DQ. Yeah. Then they double-team Taz and attack his ribs with Boss Man's nightstick as fans chant bullshit. And the story here was that Taz kept fighting back even as he was beaten down. Boss Man eventually broke the nightstick on the top of the head of Taz, who was then bleeding, and Taz just kept fighting back so he wouldn't die, and that was his storyline, I guess, at the time.
Taz had debuted a month earlier against Kurt Angle, and within a month, you go from that to a feud with the Boss Man.
And Prince Albert. This was a huge...
Yeah. Can you imagine if like somebody did this in real life? Like the moment you sense that you're gonna lose, you get disqualified on purpose. Like if George St. Pierre fighting Jake Shields
Could happen. Where if Jake is like taken down right away, and Nick and Nate Diaz just run into the cage, that could totally happen in an MMA fight with the Diaz brothers. They're not immune to brawls.
It's so stupid.
Then we get a video for Kane and X-Pac featuring X-Pac telling Kane, "You and me, we're bros." And they replayed this over and over. This video featured some stipulation match where X-Pac put up Tori for the holiday season.
Oh,
this Kane put Tori up. He put his own girlfriend up on the line and said, if I lose, you can have my girlfriend for the Christmas holidays.
This three-minute video, it
was so stupid.
It had every ridiculous cliche of professional wrestling.
So it comes out that Tori seduced X-Pac over the holidays. Kane was then institutionalized into a mental asylum until he returns with Paul Bearer. We also saw X-Pac wearing Tommy Hilfiger overall jeans, which I had to note. X-Pac then attacks Kane with a flamethrower. Then they bring up that flamethrower attack occurred 3 days ago on SmackDown. 3 days prior to this pay-per-view. Not a mark on Kane, nor any noticeable problems. So that leads to our no-holds-barred match with Kane and X-Pac.
They've invested so much time and so much money into this piece of shit.
Let's not forget how busy X-Pac was at this point, because he was apparently the road agent for every one of Chris Jericho's matches at this point.
Is that right?
That was part of the meeting when Vince yelled at him in December of 99. He said, all of your matches, you have to go over with X-Pac because he knows how to work.
Wow.
And can teach you.
Unbelievable. X-Pac.
Right away, X-Pac tries to leave the ring with Tori, but Kane fights with him near the entrance. Kane gets shoved into the fencing area at the entrance. Then Kane comes back with a trash can shot to the head of X-Pac. They fight back near the ring, and Paul Bearer then attacks X-Pac and then chases after Tori. And seeing Paul Bearer run was a highlight enough for me in this match. X-Pac hits the Bronco Buster in the ring, one of the dumbest-looking moves I've ever seen. Kane then catches X-Pac and attempts a tombstone, but X-Pac escapes, hits a low blow and then an X-Factor, but Kane gets back to his feet and then hits a top rope clothesline and then another choke slam. Tori then jumps onto the back of Kane, but Kane hits her with a tombstone, lifts up the steel steps, and X-Pac drop kicks the steps into Kane's face and gets on top for the win. X-Pac wins.
X-Pac wins.
He steals the girlfriend, blows fire into this guy's face, and wins the blow-off match. Fuck.
Well, he knows how to work. You know, I gotta say, crowd was very much into this match. It seemed like they were very behind Kane. I don't know why. Maybe that bazooka shot really did it for him. Really drew that sympathy out for Kane.
The third degree burns turned the crowd up.
But I really hate this finish. It just looks so weak. X-Pac just kicks the steps on the Kane. And
especially when you consider the steps, it's like a triangle going in. So and it's like, what hit you? You're wearing a metal mask on top of this.
We're not stupid. Like, anyway, it just made Kane look like he beat himself. And Lawler calls it one of the greatest wins ever.
If he lost his girlfriend, maybe he was.
What?
Beat himself.
Oh, you're so funny.
If you send in your cable bill, folks, you get a free No Way Out t-shirt. And before Ross even finishes plugging this, Lawler, in the most sarcastic tone, said, this is our best prize yet. And it looked like this shitty, like, 7-Eleven shirt with Triple H's posing on it.
I'm sure he wasn't that clever.
No. Michael Cole's backstage with the Radicals, who all say they aren't nervous. And they all went around making dancing references.
Yeah, it was so forced.
Eddie says he's there for moral support and pulls out a pipe. And he had an injured elbow at this time.
Okay.
It wasn't even the first guy to do a pipe gimmick on this show.
Yeah, not only that. You're planning a secret hidden attack with a pipe. Well, why would you tell the world in your pre-match interview, I'm going to hit this guy for a pipe. Watch out, referees.
You're like X-Pac in his promo before on SmackDown saying, I'm going to torch his face on fire.
Yeah. Well, one thing, it would be, to threaten a guy would be one thing, but this is a match that clearly had rules, and this was supposed to be a secret attack of some sort. Oh, but yeah, these promos I didn't enjoy from any of these guys, the Radicals.
So Chris Benoit went from winning the WCW title in the main event of the pay-per-view in January 2000, to returning on pay-per-view here in February 2000, teaming with Dean Malenko and Perry Saturn against Too Cool and Rikishi. Rikishi hits his leg drop onto Malenko early, and we should note that Rikishi had his ankle taped up from an earlier attack. It probably was run over by a truck.
His ankle wasn't taped up. His boot was taped up. They put bandages around his boot.
Well, you got to make it visual way. You got to...
The boot is suddenly part of his anatomy. He's got to keep that boot straight.
Oh, and the for you aspiring workers out there, if you want to learn something about selling, take some notes of Rikishi there in this match. Eddie runs in, but he's attacked by Rikishi. This was all before the bell rang. Then Scotty, he makes his moonwalk tag to Rikishi. Rikishi comes in, applies the stink face to Benoit, then goes for the Rikishi driver, but Malenko drop kicks him to the bad left ankle. Rikishi starts selling the ankle, and then uses the same leg that he's selling to kick Saturn in the face and then tag Scotty. Malenko cuts off Scotty, attempting the worm, and the crowd boos. We see a rear chin lock by Saturn to Scotty, and the crowd was much behind Scotty at this point. Then Benoit just chops the shit out of Scotty. The Radicals keep Scotty in their corner with frequent tags. Then the back of Benoit's head smacks into the face of Scotty as they go into the turnbuckle, which looked very, very painful. And it led to a hot tag to Rikishi. And I think he forgot about his ankle at this point because he was moving very gingerly. Then Rikishi hits the Rikishi driver to Saturn. Scotty hits the worm on Saturn to a big pop. But then Ross states that Malenko is the legal man. I got very confused here. And twice, Malenko does the same spot where he runs in and clips the ankle of Rikishi. And then I don't know if he thought the camera missed it, but he went around and did it again. Then Christopher hits the hip-hop drop on Saturn. The ref's distracted as Benoit hits the diving headbutt. Too Cool takes Benoit and Saturn over the top rope to the floor as Malenko works on the ankle of Rikishi in the ring. And then Rikishi hits the Rikishi driver on Malenko, drags him across the ring, hits the bonsai drop, and the Radicals lose on their first pay-per-view to Too Cool and Rikishi, who dance after the match.
Yeah, well,
there was their spot on the totem pole.
Yeah. I mean, Rikishi had a lot of momentum going for him at this time. I really do think he was on his way to becoming a solid main eventer. But this is just a really odd way to book those guys. Why would they come in as heels? Why would the Radicals come in as heels?
I don't know. They promo WrestleMania all day long for 12 hours, $49.95. Which is less than a regular pay-per-view cost now in HD.
Well, inflation.
Yeah, I guess. And Kurt Angle continues celebrating in the lobby. Can you imagine watching WWF for 12 hours on WrestleMania Sunday?
I think there are a lot of people that did, including one of our board members.
Yeah, Facebook. I did not.
I remember somebody saying that they
I guess if you're spending $34.95 for the three-hour event, I mean, what's an extra $15 and you can just have it on?
Yeah, well, that I'm sure that was the idea.
That's actually what I don't watch any football, but each Super Bowl I find I watch a lot of the pregame stuff, and then when the game starts I'm really not that interested. But I love watching the hype stuff go leading up. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's incredible all the stuff they do.
I remember WrestleMania 17, they had remember Bite This on WWE.com?
Yes.
They had like an all day bite.
Oh, really?
This with like Kevin Kelly and Taz, and they would just bring in guys that were going to be featured and do interviews with them. I watched a lot of that. I really enjoyed all that.
There was a time when Bite This was like, I really enjoyed that show.
Mm-hmm.
They would be
they're all shoots.
Yeah, it was like they weren't trying to, you know, get over storylines and shit. Mm-hmm. WCW Live was entertaining because they would have WCW talent come on and bury WCW.
Oh, yeah.
It was hilarious.
And the phone calls too, I think.
Yeah, some of them were just ridiculous.
Yeah.
We come back with a video package for The Rock and Big Show featuring the Rumble finish. Show then gathering evidence that he won the Rumble. And then he interferes in a match to allow Chris Benoit to beat The Rock. So a week prior, Chris Benoit pinned The Rock on Raw. And then, I guess in the last week, the Big Show threw The Rock through a glass window. So yeah. I assume Rock cannot wrestle tonight. That's a very serious injury.
Mm-hmm.
Be all cut up and
can't
wrestle like that.
That's just the glass.
Throwing through glass.
Yeah, well, yeah, they've done a lot worse. He's got thick skin.
I guess he does because the match went ahead. Big Show against The Rock. Rock not sporting even a scratch from this potentially fatal bump. And the winner would get the WWF title shot at WrestleMania. deeming the Rumble somewhat unnecessary in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
They fight.
That's the problem with this February pay-per-view.
I know. I completely agree.
They feel they've
got to put that slot up for grabs to gain interest. But it's like, is it worth the extra buys for February by taking emphasis off the Rumble?
Maybe it is.
They did that in 99 as well, when Vince McMahon won the Rumble.
They do it every year. They always put the negate the Rumble stipulation.
It's like they have someone win the Rumble, and then they do two elimination chambers for the title.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, you lost the Rumble, big deal. 10 of you are going to get an opportunity now to win it at the February pay-per-view in a chamber match.
Yeah. Well, they obviously feel like they need something for that February. I think they should. They could be more. Anyway, that's not. Never mind.
They fight on the floor to start, going around the ring. We see a sidewalk slam by Big Show for a two count. Ross calls Big Show's cover lazy or maybe unmotivated. Show then brings a chair into the ring, but Rock kicks him in the gut and the chair falls down. Rock is then thrown into Earl Hebner for the ref bump. Show then hits a choke slam, and now Tim White is late running in to count. And then he's pulled out by Earl Hebner. And then Hebner and White continue their argument from earlier in the night. And then Shane McMahon comes out to his theme music. Rock hits Big Show with a chair and then hits the Rock Bottom. And as he's going for the people's elbow, when he's coming off the ropes, Shane jumps into the ring, hits Rock with a chair, and Show rolls up the Rock as Tim White counts three. So theoretically, Big Show is going to WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like this at all.
Because of the finish?
I thought it was weak, and I don't think one single person didn't believe that Big Show was going to either lose this title opportunity or The Rock was going to get into WrestleMania. There was no way Rock was not headlining WrestleMania.
Mm.
And they ended up doing that four-way. But to me, it was like, this was the year that I don't think they solidified the WrestleMania main event until 2 weeks before the show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they went back and forth with all these different changes. I never liked that build that year.
And at the end, it turned to shit. Who wants a four-way match for a WrestleMania main event?
No, no one. It wasn't that great a match. And as well, I thought it took a little out of the main event because you're thinking to yourself, okay, who here is going to take on the Big Show? We're either going to get Triple H in the Big Show or Big Show and Cactus Jack at WrestleMania. Two matches that no one could possibly care about. Whereas if you had The Rock win the match, you could totally believe, okay, that guy is going to WrestleMania, and you either do him and Triple H or you do him and Cactus Jack.
Mm-hmm.
Two matches that are easily believable as WrestleMania main event matches.
Well, absolutely. I guess they wanted the Big Show in that main event. They really wanted their money's worth.
The only guy in history that headlined WrestleMania and was sent down to Ohio Valley Wrestling later that year.
Good point.
So we then go to a video of past Hell in a Cell clips and the angle to set up the main event with Hunter wanting to face Cactus Jack one more time but put his career on the line. And Jack agrees. Then we see Angle singing I Am the Champion in the parking lot. He's attacked by Chris Jericho and Chyna, who's wearing a purple spandex outfit, and they toss him into a car trunk and lock him in there.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently he just stayed there for the rest of the night.
Mm-hmm. He did.
And then it's time for our main event, Way. Triple H with Stephanie McMahon, who was wearing this horrible gray denim outfit.
Yeah.
Looked bad.
Who picks her wardrobe, do you think?
Herself? I don't know.
Could be.
Versus Cactus Jack, Hell in a Cell match for the WWF title against Jack's career. Foley brings a chair out early into the match. Jack takes a knee and goes off the apron into the cage. Then the steel steps were thrown into his head. And then Hunter hits the steps with a chair with Cactus Jack underneath.
That toss to the head looked devastating.
It looked really bad. Like, it just hit him right in the side of the
exactly
head.
Exactly the way it sounds. Hunter just took those steps and tossed them at this man.
Like a shot put.
Yes, but this was to set up a spot later on.
Hunter then hits a drop toe hold to Jack into a chair in the corner. Hunter's on the floor, and then he's catapulted into the cage, and at this point, Hunter does color. Jack comes off the second rope with a chair to Hunter on the floor. And at this point, you can see Cactus Jack, the side of his arm was starting to bleed.
Yeah. Are you sure that didn't come until later, though? That that cut on his arm?
I think it came right after it.
Okay. But anyway, this jump off the floor was the other crazy spot here in this match before all the other shit happened. Foley just basically jumps off the top turnbuckle onto the floor with this chair. And in his book, Mick actually says that he broke his nose here when he...
Oh, really?
His nose collided with the chair. And Hunter said that he was almost knocked out from this shot.
Then we go to... Jack throws the steps at Hunter this time, who moves out of the way, and it opens up the cage,
mm-hmm.
and they fight outside of the cage onto the announce table.
Yep. They bolted this cage door at the beginning, like, they wrapped it around, like, maybe two or three times, I think, just to show that there was no way out for these guys, and I thought this was a really clever way of getting that door open by using that same spot from earlier, tossing the steps through the cage, and almost killed that security guy standing outside.
Cactus hits a pile driver onto Hunter onto the announce table. Then Jack teases climbing the cage to a big pop, but Stephanie stops him, and then Jack finds the barbed wire 2x4,
mm-hmm.
and this leads to Hunter scared of the 2x4 and starts climbing up the cage, gets to the top.
Yeah, this was a real 2x4, by the
yeah.
way. Because, a real barbed wire 2x4. Because in the Rumble match, that gimmick bat was made with soldering metal, and it actually hurt Hunter more than the real bat would have. And so Hunter took a shot to the head this time with that bat, but it was a real thing.
So as Hunter climbs to the top of the cage, Jack climbs up the side, but Hunter knocks him off the side, and he goes through a table, very similar to the Shawn Michaels spot in the very first Hell in a Cell match with Taker. And Jack is down. Jim Ross is selling it really big that he's taking this big bump. And then Jack recovers, and he picks up a chair, and he's got so little room and probably was pretty tired at this point and couldn't throw it to the top of the cell. And he mm-hmm. tried like four times, and after two, the camera just cut away. And I guess it kind of took some air out of the match at that time. When
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
But they got back into it.
Yeah, Foley, I think he really needed the chair up there to... I don't know what he was going to use it for, but I'm guessing to combat Triple H, who had the barbed wire bat at this time. And they worked around it.
So anyway, Jack climbs up without the chair. They wrestle on top of the cage, including a suplex by Cactus Jack to Hunter. Jack then lights the 2x4 on fire and hits Hunter. He sets Hunter up for a pile driver onto the flaming 2x4, but Hunter counters with a back body drop as Jack goes through the cell and lands on a gimmick part of the ring that caves in, and the fans chant, "Holy shit," as Hunter climbs down the fencing. Hunter just basically tiptoes around him, kicks him lightly to see if he's moving, but then Foley puts his arm back and makes one last comeback that the fans get into. But Hunter cuts him off, gives him the pedigree, and gets the win as Ross is yelling for Cactus Jack to kick out, but he doesn't. Hunter gets the win. And at this point, the camera stayed on Cactus after the match. Hunter leaves, and it's just quiet as the fans chant Foley as he walks out and into the back, puts his arm up, and there's a standing ovation as they announce that it's the end of Cactus Jack's career until the next pay-per-view.
I really liked the bump here with the gimmicked mat. I mean,
it was fairly safe, when you compare it to the stuff he did in the Taker match.
It looked amazing, and the whole draw of this match was for them to recreate some of those incredible moments from that first Hell in a Cell against the Undertaker, and they did it really the best that they could have, the safest that they could have, and. I almost like this more because it was so well planned out and very well executed and as safe as it could have been, which is really the whole point of professional wrestling when you think about it. A guy should not be falling through that thing legitimately. He should be falling through it and looking like it hurt, but not really getting as hurt as he probably did. And so in that sense, I thought it was a lot more artistic, this fall through the cage.
Yeah, I enjoyed the street fight at the Rumble more than this match. I mean, mm-hmm. this match is still very good, and it's these both of these matches that everyone kind of looks at as the turning point for Triple H as a main event talent. Overall, though, I'm giving this show a 5 out of 10, maybe even 4.5. I wasn't too impressed overall with this card. I thought a lot of stuff was kind of left a lot to be desired. There were some shitty matches added to it at the last minute, like Viscera and Henry and Taz and Boss Man, which is more of an angle than anything. And I just thought Rock and Big Show was not anything to be too entertained by. So I'll give this one a 5 out of 10. Really a really good main event, but that was about it on this show. And the opener was fine with Jericho and Angle. Not great, but not bad.
Yeah, no, there's really nothing worth watching on this show except that main event. And I would say a 6.5 for me, strictly for that match. And actually, probably a number that was watered down by everything else on the card.
So before we go to our feedback, everyone, we've got a surprise for you. We are now going to go to an old interview we have with Mick Foley, where he talks about his retirement, and that lasted all of 4 weeks. And believe it or not, when this show was over, he fully believed he was done. He was done wrestling and that he was retired, but it was very difficult to give up a main event payday at WrestleMania. So this is an interview all the way back from June of 2001 that Jeff Merrick conducted with Mick Foley. And here's a bit of that interview right now discussing this whole time period for him when he thought he was retiring.
Speaking of retirement, Mick, I remember the last time I talked to you, you're up here doing TSN's Off the Record. It was a Monday night. Raw was in Buffalo that night. And you said, you know, in full confidence, tonight I'm going to go on Raw and announce that I'm going to retire unless they tell me otherwise, unless they have some drastic plan. What happened that night in Buffalo when you got to Raw?
They wanted me to put it off a couple weeks. It had something to do with Stone Cold's neck injury.
Mm-hmm.
It may not have been that week, but I think they wanted me to put it off 1 week so they could work it into a storyline. And then Austin ended up having the what was thought to be career-ending neck injury. And it's like, you know, everyone wants to retire kind of like in a blaze of glory. And it was thought that, you know, I'd be kind of retiring in a little puff of smoke if I retired at the same time that Austin did. So instead, it even said on USA Today, it says Mankind makes shocking announcements. So it was supposed to happen, and it got put off a couple months.
Are you happy the way you went out? I mean, those two matches with Hunter, both of them were Match of the Year candidates. You had to be happy that at that stage of your career, when you realized to yourself that you couldn't perform up to the level that you were accustomed to or you were comfortable with, you went out there and did Match of the Year candidates on your way out.
Yeah, that was definitely nice, and I cover those I think pretty well in the book. And then there was the surprise not happy ending where it should have been. I mean, they called me up and all right, make you retire, but we want to do one more match at WrestleMania, and it was kind of very lackluster effort on my part. Not that I was trying to go out there and be bad, but my heart really wasn't in it. But it did mean a lot to be able to go out that way, and that's really why I didn't retire in November, like I said, because I had the feeling like, you know, I'm just kind of taking the easy way out by going out as a, you know, Mankind wearing the sock instead of having the matches that kind of made me somewhat famous to begin with.
I remember at that point, I mean, before the Royal Rumble match and the Hell in the Cell match last year, your two matches on the way out, you were talking very openly and publicly, and everyone was talking about how Mick Foley's body is banged up. Mick Foley can't do it anymore. It's, you know, it's limping ain't easy. He's hurting. He's aching. And you went in there and you killed yourself in those two matches. How much of a toll did those two matches have on your body above and beyond what your body had already endured?
You know what? I mean, I was kind of riding on an emotional high there. You know, because the body, you know, the mind is stronger than the body or some saying like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really even think about it. And then, you know, at the end of February after that second match, I was like, now I can just, you know, let some of these aches go away. And like I said, I had to go back out there another month. But I don't think, you know, once you reach that point where you're hurting so bad anyway, it's like the playoffs in football, from what I've been told. I was never that great a football player. But it's like these guys are really hurting big time, you know, by the time the playoffs start. But when you have that Super Bowl on the horizon, you know, you can kind of put the pain out of your mind for another week or two. And that's kind of what I did.
You know, I find what's happened to Mick Foley really, really interesting compared to how other wrestling fans treat other performers. Generally, wrestling fans want to see their wrestlers endure so much punishment and keep getting up and keep getting up. But now with you, fans cringe every time a chair comes near your head or anytime you're in any danger at all. You find that really bizarre? Like, you're like the one guy that people don't want to see get beaten up.
Yeah, they actually started caring about me.
Totally.
I mean, what's wrong with that picture? Yeah, I mean, I'd have fans of last year especially going, Nick, you know, take it easy. 50% of you is better than none at all, you know.
Yeah.
And I kind of listened to them. You know, I backed off the punishment there and kind of became a comedy figure there for the last year, except for those last couple months. But it was, I feel like, I don't know, somehow I kind of eclipsed the normal wrestler who's just seen as a, you know, a piece of meat there for the fans' enjoyment. And people did start caring about me, which is kind of nice.
Mick, wrestling is like Hotel California. We all know it. You can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave. Will you wrestle again?
You know what? I mean, I was even planning on wrestling at WrestleMania, and it was even planned on. Just let's face it, I mean, I've been out of it for 60 weeks. The normal wrestling retirement lasts 6 weeks. So even if I did come back for a month, I'm still like Abraham Lincoln compared to, you know, the rest of the Pinocchios out there. So I wouldn't think that I was, you know, really going back on my word. And you know what? The truth is, if I've got some more time left on my contract with the WWF, and there's only so much they can do with me until it eventually has to end up in a, you know, physical altercation. That is the nature of the business. So. Mm-hmm. Especially if it was going to, you know, help get the word out on this book, you know, I might be willing to go in there. And I don't even think the fans would be expecting a, you know, a four-star classic from me. I think they'd be happy to see me hit Vince McMahon a few times with a garbage can and put a sock on him.
Yeah, I was going to say the natural, I mean, you have to finish up the Vince McMahon story now, don't you?
Yeah, the Vince story's been going on for like 3 years. It's a great story. If they ever like were able to do like a 10-minute piece just on the history between me and Vince back from when, you know, he was kind of controlling me, and I saw him as a father figure, but he hated my guts. There's some really great history there to be mined if they did it correctly.
Sounds like a good video.
Could be.
So there we have it from Mick Foley himself discussing this time period, everybody, where he retired, so we thought, after this No Way Out pay-per-view, but then came back April the 2nd for the four-way at WrestleMania. And after that match, he then was off for quite some time. I can't remember his next match was years later.
Yeah, against Orton?
I think that was it, yeah. So, pretty impressive time away.
Yes.
At least for wrestling standards.
Uh-huh.
So, now we will get into some feedback, everybody, because you've sent us quite a bit of it. So, let's dive into the feedback here, Way. And we'll start off with Richard Lee commenting on No Way Out. Hey guys, I love the Rumble and review of Raw shows from this past week. I really enjoy both Dave Lagana and Jimmy Cordero segments on the show and would really like to hear more from those two if possible. Now to No Way Out, an interesting evening of wrestling to say the least, with that horrible Viscera Henry match and a very good Hell in a Cell, which really sold Triple H to me more than the Rumble match. Can't wait till review and Impact, and hey, remember, times are tough, so you have to contact by having kitchen scenes.
Connect.
Sorry, you have to connect. By having kitchen scenes to show you are in touch with the common man, or at least that's what Russo thinks, unfortunately. Kitchen debate just took on a life of its own.
Yeah, that's right. Royal Rumble 2005. Liam Flynn. Hey, Way and John, great review of the Rumble. Regarding John's opinion of my comment about Brits and Canadians having different opinions on wrestling, I think it boils down to us having different senses of humor, and therefore what entertains us and annoys us in general seems to differ. But isn't this what can be so great about pro wrestling? Everyone perceives it differently. I have just finished the Rumbles from 89 to 90, and the difference was unbelievable. You had guys like Warrior, Hogan, Andre, Savage, Jake Roberts, and DiBiase, to name a few, and going off the two previous winners, Duggan and John Studd, you had so many more guys with a chance of winning, and today we are guessing between Cena, Del Rio, and Punk.
Well, that's true. The depth is definitely not what it was once was at certain points in history for the Rumble.
I don't know if that matters, though. I mean, I think they had a number of people, a number of legitimate contenders if they promoted them that way. But the focus really is just on three people for this Rumble.
And I mean, in fairness, I mean, there's been a lot of years where it was, you know, you figured it was going to be Austin or it would be Rock or, you know. Danny Powers, my favorite part of the Rumble 2005 was when Daniel Puter was the third entrant and hesitantly walked into the ring to the waiting arms and chops of Chris Benoit and Eddie Guerrero. The fourth wrestler was Hardcore Holly, and he joined in on the fun too. I guess it was their way to initiate Puter into WWE. Either that or those grizzled veterans were a little upset to see some rookie win the $1 million Tough Enough.
Mm-hmm. Jermone Jackson, the Rumble in general was one of my favorite events, and 2005 was a very good one. I remember winning a free order of hot wings at Hooters for winning the Rumble pool that night. I also loved the Muhammad Hassan elimination and Vince McMahon becoming the first non-participant to get injured during a Rumble. I would love to hear a review of the 1992 Royal Rumble. It was possibly the greatest Rumble ever in terms of star power.
Josh Thomas, I ordered the 2005 Royal Rumble. I don't really remember the card besides the actual Rumble match, except for Triple H and Orton. Anyways, it was great to see Angle enter in and destroy everyone, only to get tossed out by Shawn Michaels. I also liked at one point you had Edge, Jericho, Benoit, Booker T, Shelton Benjamin, Eddie Guerrero, Mysterio, all in one ring. Good times. It was clear lots of people wanted Batista to win. However, at that point, I was hoping for Cena.
Clark Devon, Royal Rumble 2005 was a good pay-per-view. This was the first Rumble pay-per-view I saw. I started watching wrestling in July of 2005. My dad bought me the DVD of the show that summer. Batista winning was great. I liked the feud between Triple H and Batista. That Rumble... I don't know. This is just funny.
What?
It's a funny review to read out loud in written. In.
Okay, I get what
The you're... Rumble match was good, too. Undertaker's match was good. The WWE title match was cool. World title was great. Great show all around. 2005 was a good year for WWE. My rating, 9 out of 10. Well, thank you, Clark.
That was concise. Brendan Caulfield. I'm shocked you guys didn't mention Triple H telling Eddie he's a dead man, or when Benoit and Eddie were in the ring and the commentator said something about both of them would die to go to Mania. Anyways, great review. Love the commentary / thoughts on the matches. Especially liked Lagana's insight into everything, and after looking back to the Rumble finish, the first one, you can see when Batista puts Cena on his shoulders, he falls back with Cena trying to stop him by holding the ropes, but still looked pretty good.
Sean Prasad, Royal Rumble 2005 was one of my favorite pay-per-views. I enjoyed the interactions with Guerrero and Flair, Cena and Christian, and Angle and Michaels. I feel like this was the last year when the brand split actually felt big because there were so many established workers and stars, and they would keep them separate until one of the big four pay-per-views would approach. By the way, I marked out when There's No Easy Way Out by Robert Tepper started off the latest edition of the review of Raw.
Mm-hmm, yes. Cena's shitty commentary inspired that song. Matt Cruz, hey guys, although I agree with what Benoit, Guerrero, and Holly did to Pewter was overboard, he did deserve every bit of what he got. From the first minute he got in the company, he thought he was better than everyone because he was an MMA fighter. I don't see how that's founded at all. This guy entered a contest, he came in, and he won the contest. I mean, what was... I don't see what the issue was.
Yeah, it wasn't the big issue.
This wasn't a guy who had a big head backstage or was around calling himself a shooter to everybody.
But this guy actually tried to hurt one of your employees on national TV.
Okay, well, let's review, though, that segment where Angle was, like, literally beating the shit out of guys and inviting them into the ring to have... Like, those guys had no idea what that segment was going to be.
Yeah.
I mean, he's watching Kurt destroy these guys. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he defended himself in that segment.
He didn't... Okay, he defended himself, but he... It's such a blurry line.
If you're not going to tell these guys what this segment is and what we're trying to accomplish, we're sending you out blind.
Uh-huh.
How do you think they're going to react? When Angle was shooting on the other guys, they're supposed to just sit there and get attacked? That was a dumb segment. It was really, really dumb.
Should ask Jimmy Corderas about that.
All right.
He was the guy who had to break it up.
Was he?
Yeah. Forrest Bowling. Pewter now runs a program against bullying. Not joking.
Yep, that's very true. He's gotten a lot of pub on that, too. Andrew Decker. Just watched the 2005 Rumble. Jim Ross called Charlie Haas Rene Dupree through the whole thing.
Didn't notice that. Greg Taylor. Loved the Rumble review and the Lagana Corderas commentaries. It really added something. After all these years of watching, I can't believe they haven't booked a Rumble finish where number 28 and number 29 eliminate each other and the last guy walks to an empty ring to win the Rumble. It'd be a great spot for Del Rio or Punk. Thoughts?
I don't know. It just seems like a real... I guess it obviously worked for a heel, but...
By the end of the Rumble, though, you almost always know who number 30 is. So I don't know if there's that much... It's not the most dramatic finish you can come up with, I don't think.
I think people, I don't know. To me, it just kind of trivializes the Rumble, where a guy just flukes in to win the Rumble and does nothing. I mean, it's... Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, if it
Who
was
knows?
Like,
maybe they will do it.
Maybe if it was like Evan Bourne. Evan Bourne could be number 30. And
you never know. 40.
40, yes.
Ben Brisebois. Wrestling is the only live theater or theater in front of a live audience on TV other than SNL. It's also a folk art. I suppose those are excuses for academic people to watch it.
Hmm. Yes, it could be. Kurt Morales, please don't review UFC 1. We're not all MMA marks. I think I speak for a lot of people when I say we're tired of having it shoved down our throats when we listen to wrestling podcasts.
Josh Thomas, I don't really follow UFC, but I wouldn't mind a review of UFC 1. It would be interesting for sure.
And finally, from Stephen Rowe, you guys should definitely review next season of The Ultimate Fighter, though. I'd imagine Lesnar's popularity will draw a huge amount of wrestling fans, and maybe convert a few, too. I love MMA, and I've recently watched UFC 1, which I thought was hilarious, but unless you're a fan of modern MMA, most of the charm and comedy will be lost on those that don't watch. I'd love the review personally, but I'd expect a torrent of abuse if you guys decided to review it. Why not make a list of some of the pro wrestlers who have tried their hand at MMA in the past, such as Alberto Del Rio, Nathan Jones, etc., and review all of them in one episode of Review Away? I'd imagine both MMA and wrestling fans would be happy enough.
If we were to go through every pro wrestler that has done MMA, the list is staggering for those of you that think it's only a handful of guys. Yeah. It's a ridiculous amount of crossover between both.
And what would the appeal of the review be?
Yeah.
How well they did?
Yeah.
How well they executed their...
Yeah, it's kind of reviewing it without really a context of the event or a fight or just... It'd be like career bios.
It seems like there are enough people out there that would be upset about a UFC review for us to probably decide not to do it.
Yeah, we'll have to. The MMA, it's a slow process for some folks.
Some, you know what? Like we talked about this earlier in the week with Josh Nason. I mean, there's definitely a demographic out there that is certainly content with just what the pro wrestling is, what pro wrestling presents to them right now, and does not look for MMA or that type of sports entertainment
mm-hmm.
to. You know, help their appetite.
Yep, I agree. All right, so we're going to wrap things up, everybody. And next week, I know this is an event that people have been requesting for a long time now, and we've kind of been lazy at getting around to it, and it really doesn't tie in with February or the Super Bowl that are going to be coming up next weekend. But what's more entertaining than the Uncensored pay-per-view, everybody? We're going to review the very first Uncensored show that WCW presented in 1995, featuring all gimmick matches, all poorly booked, and a reasonable time as well to review mm-hmm. it in. So that'll come up next week. And I think also, Wei, I want to throw out next weekend is also the anniversary, the 10-year anniversary of the debut of the XFL. So for any of you that recall that time period, maybe even watch some of the games, we'd love to hear your feedback on the XFL and what you remember of it. And maybe we'll even try and find a guest that maybe can chat with us about the XFL.
Amazing.
We know very little about football, but we'll chat a bit about the XFL next weekend, because that was a very interesting time in the WWE when the wrestling business was through the roof and then this giant bomb dropped mm-hmm. That cost them... $55 million.
Yeah.
So that'll be coming up next weekend, everybody. Uncensored 95, XFL discussion, maybe a guest. And, of course, we're back on Tuesday with Review a Raw, Friday with Review and Impact, as always. So, Wade, do you have a tune that can end off today's program?
No, I do not.
Oh, you don't? Okay.
Sorry. Let's end with... Saliva.
Any particular Saliva song?
No. No.
Okay. It's Saliva, and that's all.
I hear a voice and don't be so blind. It's telling me all these things that you would probably